Okay, this is to call the city council meeting to order for April 18th, 2022. Peggy, roll call, please.
Kaplan.
Here.
Bateo. Hall.
Here.
Parker.
Here.
Doble.
Here.
Jacoby.
Here.
And Sawyer.
Here. Would you all please join me with the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Now is the time for public comments. Peggy, I believe you have something.
There are two public comments. None were received by email, but I had two slips that were turned in, and those are for items not on the agenda. And one of the persons who's speaking has documents to distribute to council and did not want that distribution time to count against her 3 minutes.
Okay, do you want to distribute that now?
I don't.
Or when they come up?
Yeah, when they come up.
Okay, I'm going to start off with these other two public comments. Amy Bendel.
This is the person with the.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Do you want me to count this passive around? This is getting too complicated.
You guys have another copy?
Are you short on your end?
Yeah.
I have one.
Okay. Why don't you grab it, Jen? I'll give this to Derek.
Okay.
Thank you.
Back at you.
Okay, we all have copies if you want to get started.
Okay, thank you. My name is Amy Bendel. I have lived in South Beach since 2004. I'm here tonight speaking on behalf of myself and several of my neighbors that were not able to attend tonight to advise you of the ongoing noise disturbance being created by the South Beach Church. Since the church moved in, I have personally made more than 10 requests in writing directly to the church, asking them to lower the volume of their music, the earliest going back to January of 2016. I stopped trying to reason with them in September of 2019 after I received a response from them so rude that I finally realized they did not care about how they were negatively affecting our neighborhood. The noise issue never resolved, but at some point, due to COVID, the church stopped having in-person services and the neighborhood was peaceful for the first time in a decade. Since the church has opened back up to the in-person services, the disturbance is even worse than before. The walls of my home vibrate daily from the noise coming from the church. On March 1st of this year, several of us met with the city manager, Spencer Niebel, and the chief of police, Jason Malloy, to discuss the ongoing problem. At that meeting, we were advised by Jason Malloy to call the police each time we had a noise disturbance. When we left that meeting, it was our understanding that there would be some action taken by the city, and I was told we would be contacted with an update. It has been 48 days since that meeting, and I am still waiting for an update. Per Jason's instruction, we have been calling the police every time the church gets out of control. There have been at least 13 contacts this year alone, and yesterday, after calling 7 times and with no officer showing up, my neighbor and I received a call from an officer who stated he would not be responding to any noise complaints to the South Beach Church. He would not issue them a citation or the noise would get even louder. That even if he did issue a citation, it would be thrown out of court because he did not have a decibel meter to measure the noise level. That the pastor, Luke Frechette, actually seems to enjoy it when the police are called to the church. And that if we actually want to see some results, we need to bring this in front of the city council. So I am here today to ask for your help. This church is a nuisance in our neighborhood. Not only are they constantly violating the noise ordinance by being unnecessarily loud and plainly audible, neither of which I believe require a decibel meter to enforce, but they seem to actually enjoy our discomfort. During his speech this week, Luke boasted to his followers that the band is doing such a great job that the neighbors are really upset and have called the cops multiple times because this is a joke to him. Now, we are in a unique position here where the city of Newport is the lessor of this property. I pulled a copy of the lease agreement the city has with the church, and I provided you all with copies. I would direct you to section 3.2, restrictions of use. Subsection 3 reads, the church shall refrain from any use that would be reasonably offensive to other lessees or owners or users of neighboring premises, or that would tend to create a nuisance or damage the reputation of the premises. I would interpret this to be independent of the noise ordinance and that at no time are they allowed to be offensive to neighboring properties or create a nuisance. I just have one more thought.
May yeah, please finish? Finish.
Thank you. The city of Newport is the landlord of this property and you have a renter that is intentionally causing a nuisance in our neighborhood. I am not willing to go on this way for another 1 to 3 years until they move to their new location. Our meeting with the city manager and the chief of police yielded no results. I would appreciate if you would look into this issue because we would like to come to an understanding with the church. I know that there is a way for us to peacefully exist together until they move, but that's going to require the church to lower their volume and show some respect for the residents that actually live in my neighborhood. Can you help me?
Okay, Spencer, do you have any comment?
Yeah, we did meet with a couple property owners with the complaints. We had discussions today. The chief was trying to get together with the pastor of the church, and we are setting up a meeting with him. I apologize it didn't happen earlier than this point. I have walked my dog Sunday mornings in the neighborhood as well to try to understand a little better perspective of what you're dealing with. I haven't picked the right times to do that yet.
That's the problem is by the time the police get there, it's over. But I'm representing people in my neighborhood that weren't able to be here tonight. I have a lady on the corner that called the cops April 13th, 10 p.m., the drums started. Officer Carlos Gamboa stood outside the church for 35 minutes before they opened the door. They couldn't hear him. It was until midnight drumming going on. You would not believe the amount of noise that these people are creating. Right. I have a neighbor lady on the corner. Her son works graveyard. He can't sleep during the day because every time he starts to nod off, boom, boom, boom. I'm not kidding. My house is vibrating, and it's been this way for 6.5 years is the first contact that I could verify that I had made with them. They know it's an issue, and he's thumbing his nose at us and saying, well, just because you don't like it doesn't mean I can't do it. And for some reason, we can't seem to get a citation issued. And we're being told that even if we do get one issued, it's definitely going to be thrown out of court. We were told that the city of Newport doesn't have a decibel meter, but it does not require one to enforce the noise ordinance. But the way that I'm seeing the lease, we don't even have to go by the noise ordinance. They're creating a nuisance. So I'm asking for something to be done. I did hear that you were going to have a discussion with them about how that property is going to be used because that is at the northeast corner of 35th and 101, correct?
Yeah, the agency, the urban renewal agency, which owns the property, which is the city council, they serve as the urban renewal agency, will be having a discussion about how to repurpose the property.
Right.
And so that'll be coming in the coming months. And so the existing tenants will need to vacate at some point in time, and we're going to be working through what that schedule looks like.
Right, but until that time, I mean, I was told by Spencer 1 to 3 years until I won't be able to give them a hard date to get out. I can't tell you when they're going to get out. We're not even asking for you to kick them out. We're supportive of the church. They do a lot of great things for our community. But this attitude and this dismissiveness from their pastor about how it doesn't matter what's going on in the other neighborhood, he screenshotted a Google aerial photo and circled the church and said, that's funny that you guys have a problem. There's no houses around me. Well, that's exactly right. I am 1.5 football fields away from that church, and I can hear the cymbals in my bedroom. It's not funny. It's been way too long going on, and something's got to give.
Well, anyway, on the I've asked the chief to set up a meeting with the pastor of the church to follow up with that, and I don't know if that's been set yet, but we will certainly let you know when that meeting's going to be and report back to you on it, because and I do want to get there when I can actually hear it. So I'll give you my cell phone number and call me.
45 on a Sunday.
Okay.
Who is going to call me with the update? Would that be you?
It'll be, I will call you, and once we get the date scheduled, I will let you know when that is as well. It's not scheduled as of today, so.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for your time and patience in this effort. Okay, the next person is Shalene Chavez.
Hang on. So I think I can't speak to what was done because I wasn't there, but it sounds like we need to make sure we're engineering out the purchase of a decibel meter. That's a very inexpensive tool. That shouldn't be the impetus to hold this thing up, yeah? So I guess what I expect as a counselor is that we get a clear, concise update on this issue to provide relief to that neighborhood that's feeling this impact.
No, and what we can do is we certainly can provide a report at the next council meeting, you know, on kind of the steps there, because I'm not sure about some of the enforcement issues that we just heard about, but that's certainly something that we can follow up with as well and kind of brief the council on that in 2 weeks.
It's already clear to me that these residents are being understanding and trying to work with that leasee, but it seems like something needs to be worked out, like, right.
No,
soon.
We certainly agree, and we're certainly apologetic for the time it has taken. You know, we just have not been able to pull this meeting together, but we will make an effort to do that before the next council meeting and brief you on where we're at with it.
Okay, great.
I know I've over my 3 minutes, but may I ask a follow-up question?
Yeah, please come up to the microphone.
I also just want to say there are decibel meters on apps on your phone.
Yes, yes. It's my understanding that to enforce the decibel level, it has to be a meter that is calibrated and used by someone who has been trained. However, the standard of unreasonably loud and plainly audible, when I can stand in my home with the door shut and the window shut and I can hear voices plainly in my bedroom, I can decipher the different musical tones, I can hear the cymbals, that's not required a decibel meter for that at all. I would just like to know, my follow-up question is, I was told during the meeting with Spencer and Jason that we were to call the police every time this got out of hand. Neither one of us, none of the people in my neighborhood want to do that. It's a complete waste of police resources. But I'm being told again, we're going to have a meeting, we're going to schedule a meeting. Until then, am I supposed to call the police every time that the noise gets out of hand? I just want to know, because last
Jason,
time I called the police,
would you come
they said they can't do anything.
Respond to that.
That's okay. I totally understand what she's saying about calling us and not wanting to be a bother, but that is what we are there for. So we may not be able to respond lickety-split or super quick, but we will respond. And based on comments that I heard Amy discuss today, I will check into those tomorrow. So it is concerning if nobody does show up. We have to have a really good reason for not going.
Can I ask that if we do call the police and we have video evidence that the noise ordinance is being violated, that the church be cited?
I can't commit to that. If we have evidence that there is an ordinance violation, we generally are going to take enforcement. But again, when it's dealing with a business and a leasee, there is, I guess, a procedural thing that we have to deal with the city on who gets the citation. Is it the person that signed the lease? Is it the person that's controlling the business or the building at the time? Those are things that we're going to have to work with our city attorney on.
Demar, did you have a question?
I have a question, yeah. How many times a week and how many times a day does this occur?
You couldn't set your watch by it. And I think part of the problem is that multiple people have keys. Because when it happened on the night of April 13th, this intense drumming so late at night, it was just staff from the church. And when we approached Luke about it and said, well, a different neighbor of mine approached Luke and said, what's going on today? And he says, oh, we're practicing for Easter. And she said, well, were you practicing for Easter on the night of the 13th? And he said, oh, haha, sorry, our bad. That was just a guy from Walport that's a drummer. And he thought he'd come up and get some practice. We didn't realize the microphones were on. So that guy was just in there with headphones on, just banging away on that drum, just as I'm not, I mean.
So it happens other days other than Sunday.
You could not set your watch to it. It's whenever these people, they just feel so entitled to come in here and make all this noise. You never know who's going to be there. One day, my neighbor, Shailene, who's going to give a statement, walked over to the church. The music was so loud, we weren't even in the building yet. And I could not hear what she was saying to me. We walked in, one guy in there told me he was testing the limiters. I said, well, I don't think they're working. There's nothing being limited here. It's just, I don't mean to be rude if my tone of voice is a little sharp, but you have to understand that we're tired in this neighborhood. All these people are just, it's a constant boom, boom, boom in your house. Sunday, it's like I'm attending this church and I don't go there. I support all the people that do, but I don't want to attend your service. It's like they're in my home and I can't get them out. And if they were physically in there, I could call the police and they'd remove them. But I can't get anyone to listen to me to get this noise out of my house. You could, to answer your question, short answer, all the time, every single day.
Every day.
Every single day. But you don't know what time. It's just whenever.
Does it go into the night too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like I said, there's youth night. I fully support youth night, but do you have to stand outside and scream? I can hear exactly every single word that they are saying from my house. And remember, 1.5 football fields away. Something's got to change. Their behavior and this dismissive attitude has got to change because we can exist in this neighborhood together. Friday, they had Good Friday service. It was great. Their volume was amazing. Totally supportive of that. Do it that way all the time. Sunday, we had to leave. We left our home because we couldn't handle it anymore. So I can't tell you when or where. I can tell you where. I can't tell you when.
So Spencer, what are you going to do? What's your...
I indicated that the chief and I are meeting with Pastor Luke to explain
and
the problems.
You're going to report back to the next council meeting?
I indicated that we're reporting back in 2 weeks.
We'll be at the next meeting. I would ask and just say, please expedite that meeting and make sure that he understands that he's driving everyone in my neighborhood nuts. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for indulging.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Did you want to say anything? Because you did sign up. You don't have to. And make sure you state your name before you say.
Of course. Good evening, everybody. My name is Shailene Chavez. I also live in South Beach. I actually am right next door to Amy. In front of our homes is a building. There's a woodworking shop. There's quite a few. So you can imagine how the sound must travel quite a much. I'm not a great speaker in public, so I'm just going to read off of what I have. I moved in October of 2020. I'm also here to talk about what's going on, the noise issue. Sorry, this went totally south. I was supposed to just piggyback. So let me go anyways. First and foremost, I want to make sure everybody understands I'm from a very religious family, and it's not about the church, so I don't want anybody to take it personal. This is more of a noise issue. It's not what they do. I appreciate churches and how they bring communities together, but I do want to state that I work from home, and it's been quite often now. It's going into the daytime. I don't want to get upset. I can't lose my job. And to have that, I can't explain it to you. It's like, doo, 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 like I live next to a, you know, disco place or something. But I can't have that during Zoom meetings. It's interfering with my job. I got counseled by my boss the other day because the vibration at 2:00 in the afternoon coming from that church, I don't even know what was going on. And to piggyback on Amy, it's 7 days a week, pick and choose a day, never know when it's going to be. On Sundays, the practice is early as 6:45 in the morning. It is my one day a week I don't work. So you can imagine how you would feel sitting in your own home or on Easter and packing up your children to leave to go to another home because all you hear is that. I text Luke personally, his response, my bad. I'm sorry, it's not my bad. This is my home. I would have never bought my home in 2020 if I had known that I was buying a home that would vibrate constantly. It is driving me insane to the point that I think my husband is going to leave me. And I mean, he's just like, what is wrong with you? We just are asking for your help on this issue. It is your tenant, right? It's your leasee. So if you could just help us solve this issue, I don't want to be in my home anymore. I try as much as possible not to. I go and work at my daughter's home now because it's just too much. So I really hope that the city will take this in consideration and understand. The church can stay. I just need the volume to come down, please.
Okay, thank you. And I think we will definitely have a report within 2 weeks and some action one way or the other. Thank you for bringing it to our attention. Okay, I've got two other people that want to make public comment, but I can't take them right now because they're regarding a hearing that we're having later tonight. We have specific rules from the state on this, the Planning Department of Appeal, and we can't take the public comments until afterwards. So, but I will give you your time after we're done with our hearing. Peggy, next item, please. Oh, I'm sorry, Ryan.
So now we're hearing from an entire neighborhood, so let's make sure that this is prioritized, and I'm expecting a resolution that's fair to the residents on this, whether that means a change to the lease or a fine or something to find a reasonable neighbor-friendly compromise here. I can't stress that enough that that's what we expect.
Right, and we will do our best, and we will give you a report in 2 weeks, and you will make a decision at that point whether it's an appropriate fix.
Fair enough.
Okay, Peggy, next item, please.
The next items on the agenda are proclamations, presentations, and special recognitions. And the first item is oaths of office, fire department captain, engineer, and firefighter.
Good evening, Chief.
Good evening. So, Mayor, Council, it's been a little while since we've been before you with oaths of office, but I have three folks that we are swearing in tonight. I have Captain Eric Stafford, Engineer Jonathan Anderson, and Firefighter Ryan Thomas. So, folks, guys, go ahead and please turn around or face.
Actually,
you can face the audience and
okay.
I'll kind of stand it beside you.
It's all
new
irons. I on the left is.
I, Ryan Thomas. Solemnly swear
that I will uphold the Constitution. Sorry, I apologize, thank you. But I will uphold the Constitution
and of the
state of Oregon
and of the state of ordinances
of the city of.
Firefighter of Newport Fire.
Upon which you are about to enter.
On which we are about to enter.
Folks who are bringing badges on our folks, Katie and. There we go.
Great.
Katie and
my mom.
We have three Katie. Thank you very much, everybody. Appreciate it. Thank you, Council.
Thank you, Chief.
Oh, yep. Thank
congratulations.
You.
Welcome. Congratulations. Congratulations.
While we're transitioning, Councillor Jacoby, Councillor Parker, and I had the opportunity to attend the Fire Recognition Awards for the dedicated service men and women who are part of the fire department on Saturday night, and it was a really delightful celebration. And I just want to thank Chief Murphy for emceeing and making that event happen. It was a treat to get to see all of the volunteers and sworn firefighters.
Thank you, and we really appreciate the great attendance from the council. It was really nice to have you guys there and your support. I'm glad you guys had a great time. Thank you.
And as an added bonus, Tom McAdams and his wife were there. It was neat to see them. They're
very neat.
They're such pillars of our community for all the years they've served.
Here. Great job, Chief. Except that, you know, Dietmar probably could have been promoted to captain, I think.
Probably could have been. He was a lieutenant.
Thank many, you. Many years ago.
You still got it. Okay, with that, I have a couple of proclamations I'd like to read. The first one is proclaiming April 2022 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month in the city of Newport. Sexual assault affects every Oregonian, whether as a victor or survivor, or as a family member, friend, partner, neighbor, employer, or coworker. And whereas approximately 1 in 4 adult women in Oregon have been the victim of rape, and nearly 1 in 5 men in Oregon have experienced sexual violence in their lifetime. And whereas compassionate, courageous, and dedicated individuals, local organizations, and other partners have provided services and support for victims and survivors and worked to prevent sexual violence for decades, every individual and community in Oregon has a role to play to help eliminate sexual violence by promoting sexual change. Now, therefore, I, Dean Sawyer, Mayor of the City of Newport, in recognition of the important work done by my sister's place in the Lincoln County Sexual Assault Task Force, do proclaim the month of April 2022 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month in the City of Newport, and urge all citizens to work with these invaluable community agencies to help alleviate this problem. Good evening. I understand you have some comments you'd like to make.
Yes. Thank you so much for having us here. My name is Amber Wishoff. I'm with my sister's place, also known as My Safe Place. But I also come, even though they might not be here, with a community and room full of other people here in spirit through, thank you so much, through CARE and the Child Advocacy Center and many others throughout our community. I just wanted to first thank you for recognizing that this is Sexual Assault Awareness Month and showing your support with your presence and your signature in this case. And the stats for 2021 just came out, and every 68 seconds an American is sexually assaulted. What we also know about that is that every 9 minutes one of those Americans is a child. We also know that the flip side of that is what justice looks like, and only 25 out of 1,000 people who perpetrated that crime will actually be held accountable. Those are pretty staggering numbers. We have some unique things happening in our community to rise up and support that on, as it was recognized, our SART team, that's our sexual assault response team, which includes actually some people who are even here in this room, but many members of our criminal and justice system, as well as advocacy centers, hospitals, law enforcement. So we are working together to reform and address and continue to refine how we support survivors. But we also have other supports like councils and those in the community. But also we have our council that has been going strong since 1997, right? Judge Bockhart's been a part of that. And that is our Domestic Violence Council. That has gone a little bit dormant through COVID and a little bit before that, but we just got that up and going, and it's quite amazing the response, and it has community members and agency partners that we just haven't seen all come together. It feels like everyone's lifting their heads up and connecting, seeing how everyone got through the pandemic, even though we're still in it, but and are really ready to roll up their sleeves and share what we've learned and dive in. And I love that a testament to that is really looking at everything we have done in a nuanced way. We just changed the name of the council from Domestic Violence Council to Domestic and Sexual Violence Council and are ready to jump in and take on some community projects, education. We've got committee members in the shortest time that we've ever seen. So those things are really exciting, and we will have a lot of things going out in the newspaper and other media more talking about. I don't want to take your time. I know you have a lot going on here tonight, but I just wanted to say how much we appreciate your support and are grateful for the opportunity to be here. I have a basket I will send around that has antenna ribbons in both teal and blue. We recognize the multifaceted elements of this month and also how that crosses with Child Abuse Awareness Month, and we know that we can't look at one without the other. Because they are so intertwined. So welcome you to take some goodies. We have our flyers in English and Spanish and also some coloring sheets. So thank you so much for your time.
And teal is the color for domestic and sexual assault, but blue is the color for child abuse, right? Is that right?
Sort of the purple is domestic violence, which you'll see us again in October for that. And then teal is sexual assault awareness, and blue is the child abuse awareness. So I have the blue and teal for you this month.
I so appreciate my sister's place. When I worked for the police department, there was no my sister's place way back in the day. And I can't tell you how many victims I had to release back to the offender's home. And it just broke our heart, but we couldn't do it. You know, we would try to find another home. There were, unfortunately, there were victims that had nobody that they knew here. They had no place to go. And I'm so appreciative when they started my sister's place, because it has given a place, a safe place, for people to go, and I think it's just a wonderful program. Oh, My Safe Place. I'm sorry. Changed
we
the
go
name
by both, so, you know.
It was My Sister's
it
Place.
It was, yeah. We answer by MSP, so then everybody is right.
But it's just wonderful. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I used to try to talk to the victims and try to convince them. Well, first of all, the law said that they had to press charges. The victim did, not the state. And then, fortunately, later the state changed that law, which made it a lot easier for us to deal with. But my safe place is a wonderful place. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, the next proclamation I have is proclaiming April 29th, 2022 as Arbor Day in the city of Newport. For those of you who know, Newport is a tree city, USA, and we're very proud of that designation. In 1872, Julius Morton proposed to the Nebraska Board of Agriculture that a special day be set aside for planting of trees. And the resulting holiday, Arbor Day, was the first observed with the planting of more than 1 million trees in Nebraska. And the city of Newport is committed to a community forestry program that supports safe, healthy, and attractive urban forest. And a healthy urban forest can bring a sense of vibrancy or respite, adventure or calm, escape or contentment, and connection with the wild nature amidst asphalt and concrete. I, therefore, Dean Sawyer, Mayor of the City of Newport, do hereby proclaim April 29th, 2022 as Arbor Day in the City of Newport and urge all citizens to celebrate Arbor Day and to support efforts to protect our trees and woodlands and to support the planting of trees to promote the well-being of this and the future generations. I think it's really, the council has been very supportive of this, and also we established the forest that we have. It's in the city boundary, but it's protected.
Forest Park,
thank mm-hmm. you. Did you want to say anything else?
Well, I just want to say, you know, I appreciate council with the support you guys have given Parks and Rec Department, the city as a whole, for the Tree City USA program and Arbor Day. And we do have an Arbor Day event coming up. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On April 30th, we started our first celebration for Arbor Day. Last year, we did it during COVID at the Newport Library drive-through. We're expanding the program. It was a huge success, and we will be hosting an even bigger and better Arbor Day celebration at the Rec Center. We have seedlings that we're going to be giving away. We have a lot of stakeholders within the local county area that are going to be attending. We have the Watershed Council. We have city staff, Parks and Rec. We have Oregon Fish and Wildlife. We have the Forestry Department. So we have a big group of individuals that are going to be coming, and we'd like to invite not only council, but obviously we'd like to invite the whole community to come. Take this at the time to celebrate Arbor Day, but also to learn about trees and to learn the benefits that they provide to the community. So, and that's it. Thank you.
Are you going to be sending out an invite on that?
Yes. we'll have an invite.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, guys.
Okay, the next proclamation I've been wanting to do for some time. I've talked to other mayors around the state who have either issued similar proclamations or as well. I've also had conversations with Dietmar Goebel, who is very indebted in this effort as well. Before you, you see two flags. These are the flags of Ukraine. And I brought mine in, and Dietmar brought his in. So we decided to put them both up.
You guys agreed on something.
Yeah. Oh, we always do. Whereas Ukraine is a free and democratic nation, having regained its independence in 1991, and whereas Ukraine's existence, contributions to the world economy, and contributions to the world humanity cannot be denied, and whereas on February 24th, 2022, a massive military assault was launched by the Russian government on the sovereign democratic nation of Ukraine, and whereas the continuing assault has been met by strong resistance of the Ukrainian military supported by armed civilians, and whereas Russian attacks on non-military residential areas of the Ukraine have forced the evacuation of millions of civilians to neighboring countries, and whereas the United States and other nations around the globe have issued strong condemnations of the Russian government's hostile action and have responded to Ukraine's appeal for both military and humanitarian aid, and whereas we are saddened by the unprovoked war in Ukraine, and whereas we mourn the dead, and our thoughts are with the many Ukrainians displaced from their homes, and whereas we hope for and urge a quick resolution to this war, now therefore I, Dean Sawyer, Mayor of the City of Newport, do hereby encourage all residents and visitors to keep the people of Ukraine in their thoughts and prayers and hope for a quick resolution of the war, and to donate time and resources to verified organizations that will work to mitigate the humanitarian crisis created by the conflict. Would you all please join me in a minute of silence? And this is for not only those that have been killed, but those that have been impacted. They've lost their lives, they've lost their homes. They're in other countries now, in Poland and around the world. And I think we really need to take a few minutes to think and pray about that. Thank you all. I would just like to say, I put in this proclamation about making sure that if you donate to some of these organizations, to please check them out. There are a lot of scams out there right now, and you can go online. There's charity organizations that rate these groups, and if a charity has less than 10% of their money going to administration, that's good. Unfortunately, there are some that put more percentage into administration. And what that means is they're paying salary to people. And we don't want to see the salary going to the people. We want to see the money going to where we really want it to go, into Ukraine. So please check that out before you do. And I know that there are more than 4 million Ukrainians right now that have fled to Poland and other countries. And I think, would you want to talk a little bit about Poland?
Put me on the spot, yeah. I'm happy to talk about Poland. I've gone to Poland lots of times. Probably I used to take groups of people to Poland to visit after the wall came down, just after the wall came down. Very wonderful people, but right now they're dealing with a lot of immigrants coming into their country, over 3 million so far. And in my travels there, I made a lot of friends with people of churches, and one particular church I made friends with. Pastor is now retired, but his two sons are pastors, and and I'm on the phone with them quite a bit, and I've donated to them, and I belong to Atonement Lutheran Church, and the Atonement Lutheran has donated and continues to donate. But the people that really need help, I mean, their salaries there are maybe $600 a month, and taking on this one church has taken on 80 immigrants that they have to house and feed and clothe, and they come with nothing, basically nothing. So if you keep them in your heart and prayers, and hopefully things will get better in Ukraine. Yeah. I kind of tear up when I talk about that.
I'd also like to say there's a local bakery in Walport that is making Ukrainian style breads and selling it. And I think it's every week at JC Market they have a fundraiser. So I encourage everyone to check that out. Again, check out these charities before you give, because some of them are scams, unfortunately. But we really need to make sure that this support goes directly to Ukraine. Peggy, next item, please.
The next item on the agenda is the consent calendar. And before I read that, I need to let you know that I removed the minutes of the last regular meeting from the consent calendar because I missed the complete section. So tonight on the consent calendar is approval of minutes of the work session of April 4th, 2022, approval of minutes of the executive session of April 4th, 2022, and receipt of approved committee minutes.
Do I have any comments or questions or a motion?
Quick comment on the previous item. That's Katie's Bakery down there, Waldport Pacific Sourdough, is matching donations for World Central Kitchen, I believe.
Yes.
And they're great any time of in human history, but especially now.
They're doing great work in Ukraine right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, absolutely. And so they're open Thursday, Friday, and Saturdays, I think, for walk-in customers at their bakery.
You do a great job. Thank you. Do I have a motion?
I move to approve the consent calendar.
I'll second that.
Okay, motion made by Councilor Goble, seconded by Councilor Parker. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any disapprove? Motion carries. Thank you. Peggy, next item.
The next item on the agenda is public hearings, and tonight there is a public hearing and potential adoption of resolution number 3947, providing for a supplemental budget.
Spencer.
Yeah, and on this item, my report is not coming up on my computer. I don't know if it's coming up on any other computers. The staff report done by Steve is very detailed, but I'll...
Yeah, that just happened to me, too.
Yep. So it's going to give you a message if it's doing what mine is doing. So just get out of it and get back in. So I'll cover this quickly. But again, we have a public hearing and potential adoption of resolution number 3947, resolution adopting a supplemental budget for the current fiscal year. This resolution covers a number of changes in the budget, including reimbursement from the state of Oregon of $66,686 of conflagration overtime for the fire department. And so that's been recognized as a revenue into the budget. We've transferred $800,000 going to the Big Creek Dam project and $184,628 being transferred to the capital improvements fund as part of our ARPA funding that's affecting this current fiscal year. It also includes a balance of funding for a soccer field. Part of the funding for the soccer field, the balance of it will be funded in the 22-23 proposed budget. There's a number of adjustments made to the capital projects governmental fund, including the receipt of $10,000 for the Uquinna Bay Estuary Management Plan Update Project, increasing the Newport Housing Capacity and Production Strategy Project by $30,000 and $7,500 of matching funds from the general fund contingency, and incorporating funding from South Beach Urban Renewal District to initiate the processes for annexing unincorporated pockets of South Beach and initiating funding for installation of a large septic system at the airport, which was previously approved by the Urban Renewal Committee. Finally, the city is able to transfer $123,132 of funds appropriated originally for the 35th Street US 101 project over to the ferry slip utility line undergrounding project. It's a project that the city's share of that work ended up being substantially under budget, and those funds will remain in the for urban renewal projects through the to fund the balance of the undergrounding project that's currently going on at that location. In the capital projects proprietary fund, there's a number of wastewater projects that were budgeted that we're asking to revert back to the wastewater fund contingency. Part of this was explained with the wastewater master plan. We want to get that plan completed and then identify projects and fund projects for that. And right now the wastewater fund needs the assistance because of some of the other projects that we picked up during the course of the year. $60,000 has been transferred from the golf course drive water system improvement phase two project to cover another project that we had, the Harney Street sidewalk project to rebuild the. Transferred to the to rebuild the fire hydrant as part of the resurfacing right by the Aquinnah Heights School, and the sidewalk project that'll be going up there too to provide sidewalk services to the elementary school. In the capital improvement fund, the soccer field development project was included in the water fund. Beginning fund balances were adjusted and a transfer from contingency was made to cover the annual maintenance charges for the Water Smart program that we've initiated. In the wastewater fund, projects that were closed out are recognized in fund balance, with the beginning fund balances being adjusted based on audit. And additional funding from contingency of $41,702 was being made for the purchase of a new PLC panel. In the stormwater fund, the beginning fund balance has been adjusted to the audit, and $30,000 is being transferred to repair a stormwater line under Southwest Bay Boulevard that occurred on the far western end of the street earlier this year. Finally, in the Public Works Fund, money has been moved from personal services be available to purchase software and a GPS unit in the engineering department. These funds are funds that were not spent because of vacancies in that department during the course of the fiscal year. Resolution number 3941 will increase the new appropriation balance for the city to $97,081,422. Before the council can act on this, the mayor needs to conduct a public hearing on resolution number 3947. So you'd open the public hearing.
At this time, I'd like to open up the public hearing for resolution number 3947. Anyone wishes to speak on that issue? Seeing none, close the public hearing. Any comments or resolution or motion from the council?
So, Spencer, you're robbing again from the golf course drive fund?
Just a little bit.
Did I just hear you say that?
Actually, that's not a bank, you know. It's not even a credit union.
It's a bank of golf course, so.
Any motion?
Sure. I'm going to use the language that's in the staff report. I move to adopt resolution number 3947, a resolution adopting a supplemental budget for fiscal year 2021 to 2022 and making appropriation increases and changes for fiscal year 21 to 22, incorporating attachment A as part of the resolution.
Second.
Motion made by Councilor Hall, seconded by Councilor Goble. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. Thank you all. Peggy, next item.
The next items on the agenda are communications, and the first one is a communication from Presiding Judge Cheryl Bockert regarding the opioid fentanyl issues in Lincoln County.
Good evening, Judge. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak. For those that don't know me, I'll just introduce myself. I'm Cheryl Bockert, the presiding judge for your circuit courts. Been a judge now for almost 14 years. Before that, I worked in the district attorney's office. So all told, 25 years here in this community, in specifically in criminal law. About 80% of my docket are criminal cases. Before that, in the DA's office, obviously, it was exclusively criminal cases. So I was like, know who I'm who's talking to me and what their background is. So that is my background. I now have the distinct honor of presiding over some of our specialty courts in Lincoln County. We have several. We have a drug court. We have a Hope Court, which is like it's a prison diversion court. We have domestic violence court, we have mental health and wellness court, and we just started a family support group court. So I have to say, for the size of our county, to have five different specialty courts, we have a very, it's something I'm very proud of, the services that we're able to offer through our courts. So the reason I'm here today to talk to you is I want to sound the alarm for this community on the influx of fentanyl. You have a fact sheet in front of you that I emailed in your materials for the those of you that may not know just what is it, why are we concerned about it? We're concerned about it because when I started in the DA's office, we would, you didn't want people to use controlled substances because of all the social ills that would go along with that, all the other ways it would destroy your life. But I didn't have to tell people it would kill you. And that's what the landscape has changed now. The message we're sending to people is if you use, if you experiment, you're playing Russian roulette and you could die. These are not intentional overdoses. These are people who are experimenting. They don't know what's in the drugs. Some do. But you can see from the fact sheet, we're talking about a drug that's 50 times stronger than heroin. It's 100 times stronger than morphine. If there are clinical uses for fentanyl. It's not a pain relief. It's not, we're not talking about oxy. It is something that is prescribed for people not who suffer from cancer, who are end stage. Okay, this is how powerful this substance is. And I have to say, in 25 years of my work, it's the worst thing I've seen hit our community. People are dying, and they're dying every day. So, next question is, so I've told you what the problem is. So how did we get here? Why are we in such a crisis state right now? And I'm just telling you from my experience, what I've seen is the perfect storm. And I could describe it as the perfect storm because it started, we can say a lot of things about COVID. But one of the things COVID did is just like you had restrictions on public meetings, you had restrictions that were put in place on who could be taken into custody, who could be lodged at our local jails. They had to triage. They had to prioritize. You can't lodge somebody, we couldn't during COVID, for simple, and I put in quotes, simple drug use or drug possession or drug dealing or probation violations. They were issued citations in the field. They had many. The last person I sent to jail on a probation violation wasn't on one. She'd been admitted to 13 different violations. And then she finally went to jail. Okay? We're not talking about isolated violations because during that time, and then I have to call over to jail to see if they'll take the booking. Okay? So we have COVID restrictions. So people who are in their addiction and are using, they know this. There's no consequence. They're going to get issued a piece of paper in the field, okay? The second thing, providing the perfect storm, and I'm not here, I say this to make sure you understand the confines and the landscape that I have to work under. Ballot measure 110, okay? I'm not here to give a commentary on it. I just want to tell you the reality of ballot measure 110. It is a ticket. It's a $100 fine. It's a minimum fine. That's the maximum. The minimum fine for possession of heroin, methamphetamine, OxyContin is $45. Okay? You heard an individual talk at the beginning of this meeting about a noise ordinance. Somebody violating a noise ordinance is going to get a higher fine than somebody in possession of methamphetamine and heroin. That is a greater fine. Fines are classified A, B, C, D. They had to create a new category of fines because no fine up until ballot measure 110 was low enough. There was no such thing as a $100 fine with a minimum of $45. They call these class E violations now because no other category of violation is low enough that would that would fall within that category. I pulled off just the schedule that I use for to give you some perspective. If you unlawfully provide a single-use plastic bag to customers, it's a $115 fine, okay? If you, possession of an undersized crab, okay, $165. Possession of methamphetamine and heroin, OxyContin, it is a $100 fine with a minimum of $45. And you are given the option where you can call for treatment. Okay, they have a phone that they can call for treatment. I was preparing for my presentation, and Friday, the headline in the Oregonian is Total Chaos. What is total chaos? Total chaos is ballot measure 110, because so far not a single new treatment bed has been funded since decriminalization measures passage in 2020. That's the headline in Friday's paper. There were 2,000 citations that were issued since the decriminalization that went into effect in 2021. 91 people called the treatment line, 4%. And all we know is they called, okay? I gave you statistics that Oregon Judicial Department is tracking, because one of the things that ballot measure 110 did require is that you have to file them in circuit court so we can track the statistics. You can see by the statistics, some counties have just given up. Law enforcement's given up. They don't even issue the citations. Lincoln County, since February 1st of 2021 and March 31st of 2022, Lincoln County issued 70 citations. Marion County issued 76. Our populations are not proportionate. Some law enforcement agencies are simply not issuing the citations because law enforcement saying, why bother? Why would I even write the citation? There is literally no consequence. It's frustrating as a judge when I sit in court and I call a case for possession of methamphetamine, and then the next case I call is an MIP, and the MIP for alcohol gets a $265 fine. The possession of methamphetamine gets $100. Whatever the reasoning behind ballot measure 110, it is created, I think Bewitt is creating a perfect storm here because there are no consequences, and it's running rampant. What's frustrating to me is when I see people every single day that I have worked for the last 25 years who are affected by substance abuse disorders, I see what it has cost their families, I see what it has cost them, and to have it be a $100 fine is really offensive because they know the what it has cost them in their lives. So I'm not here to write the laws, but I think it's important for you to understand the landscape that we're operating under, and these are the laws that are now in Oregon. And I share with you those statistics to give you some perspective. So we have laws written that did decriminalize possession. Fentanyl is very easy to manufacture. It's highly accessible. So before I ask you what I'm asking you to do today, to commit to, I want to tell you what I'm committed to, what I've done. So as I told you before, I've expanded specialty courts. We have, because these work, they work. People who are given that structure and those opportunities, it's not because of anything I'm doing, it's because they've committed themselves to recovery. But what I hear from the people in my courts consistently is they never would have made the choice if there wasn't a consequence. Okay, how do we help people? I'm not advocating for expanded enforcement here in just a minute, because I think more people should be jailed or go to prison. But there has to be a consequence in order for them to start making those choices. So I've expanded specialty courts. I take high-need, high-risk people. Those are my people, okay? I give them as many chances as is necessary, okay? Because what is the alternative? The alternative is they could be dead. I kept our courts open during COVID. It was important. We had virtual proceedings. We did a lot of remote hearings, but it was also very important when we, for me, that people who are in recovery, who are going through this, had to see a person. They had to be in person. They needed that structure. So I never worked remotely a single day. I went to work every single day. We never shut our specialty courts down. Most specialty courts throughout the state did. They went to that remote option. I didn't. We did, during COVID, I didn't want to backlog the cases. I wanted to keep processing the cases just as best as I could. We did 87 jury trials during COVID. We tried with them safely. We enforced social distancing. We used the Performing Arts Center, but we kept processing the cases because it's important work and it had to be done. I couldn't just put it off for 3 years. So what are we doing? The last bust, if you will, the last big bust for fentanyl in our community, I believe it was out of Toledo, and all those cases have resolved. I don't want to name names, but that was the agency. But out of that, there were, I believe, four people that were engaged in. That was a very large volume of fentanyl that was seized. One went to prison, one was placed on probation, and two of them are on my specialty court, okay, that are active in their recovery. So those are the real results, if you will, when you see these cases being prosecuted and brought into the system. So here's what I'm asking. We have a robust recovery community here in Lincoln County. We have more treatment options in Lincoln County than I have ever seen. We now even have residential treatment opportunities. We have some of folks here from the treatment community that came today. They're some of the most dedicated people that you will ever meet in your life. It's been the honor of my lifetime to get to work with them in specialty court. I can't speak highly enough about their commitment to their clients, to recovery. But they can't do it alone, and it's not a lack of treatment resources. That's what I keep hearing, and that certainly was the focus of ballot measure 110. They saw it as a need to get more people involved in treatment and recovery rather than criminal consequences, which I understand. That's a noble cause. But what they did is they eliminated any criminal consequences, and with not really giving the supports to the recovery community and not recognizing the reality that a lot of people are in recovery because of the legal consequences. So what we need to do now is we need to focus on enforcement. And it's not going to work unless we have a coordinated community response dedicated to drug enforcement. We used to have an interagency team that was made up of detectives that were dedicated in each police agency, and they came together as a team to work together to strictly dedicated to drug enforcement. That is the missing piece here, I see, and what is needed. What cannot work, I believe, is you cannot just dedicate an existing detective position and ask them to work drugs and controlled substances. They're already working big cases. They are doing other investigations. I mentioned 87 jury trials. A lot of those were child abuse cases. There are murder cases that are pending, many murder cases that are pending in our community. I'm in the middle right now of my fourth manslaughter trial in the last 18 months. Just because you don't read about it in the papers doesn't mean it's not happening. There was a two-hour trial that was a while ago with a gentleman in Seal Rock. That was the headline in the paper for weeks, reported on that. At the same time, there was a 14-count sex abuse case that was being tried across the hallway in my courtroom. That case never made the paper. So just because you're not hearing about it doesn't mean it's not happening. And the detectives are working those cases, and they have to work those cases. What we need now is to dedicate a resource specifically to drug enforcement and drug cases. The resources have been dedicated to treatment. And when I look at those that are in treatment court and I look at the lives that they're now leading, the families, the relationships they've been able to reconnect with, the husbands, the wives they are now, the mothers, the fathers, the, I don't want to tell their stories, they can share their stories. But when I look at them and I think one of them maybe wouldn't have had that opportunity, and the only reason is it's roulette, they could have been just as easily taken from us as the next person who died from an overdose and never had that opportunity, it breaks my heart. And these are productive people in your community. And they are, we'll call out Jared, who showed me his driver's license he got today, and hasn't had one for 16 years, okay? These are people who have changed their lives, have turned over new leaves. And it's a Monday night, and they're here showing their support. Okay, these are the people. And if you have questions, ask them. They will tell you. But I'm here to try and be their voice, because what they're telling me is what's missing is enforcement. They're telling me that we're not tough. People have to get into the system in order to help them. And then they do the hard work. And we try and break down barriers for them to their recovery. But they're the ones doing the hard work. And we need to support them. We need to support those that haven't made it yet into recovery. And they deserve a chance. They don't deserve to die. And they can't be disregarded. And if we don't commit these resources now, people are literally dying, and they will. And the headline in the News Times is going to be a kid in one of your schools died of an overdose. And it's a matter of time before that happens. It will happen. It's an overdose this weekend for a young woman. It's going to happen. It will happen. So I have a big ask. I know resources are scarce. I'm asking, when you're looking at your budget, to fully fund a detective position from Newport Police Department dedicated to drug enforcement. And it cannot be an existing position. It has to be one newly created, dedicated to drug enforcement. I'm making the same ask for the Sheriff's Department and the other city councils to commit to the same thing. But what I'm hoping to do is tell them Newport got on board. And Newport's ready to commit that resource. So I'm happy to answer any questions. I do have a large number of people that came from specialty court. And if you have any questions, they are very open in their recovery and what's working, what isn't, what would have made the difference. It's their stories that you should hear, not mine. They're their stories.
Do we have any questions for the judge? Ryan.
Thanks, Judge. I was before you years ago for a parks ticket. I don't know if you remember that or not. Okay. Apparently, I didn't prevent the right evidence. But anyway,
okay.
No hard feelings. So what have been your discussions with policymakers at the legislative level? Is there a contingent of special court judges that are banding together to recommend changes to the ORS that Measure 110 became in a long session next winter?
I can't. Oregon Judicial Department, we usually don't take positions on legislation, okay? We stay in our lane, okay? And I'm not here to legislate, but the reason I brought up ballot Measure 110 is so you understand what we have to work with, okay? And that's what the legislature decided. They make the laws. I don't make the laws.
Sure.
And we do not, and I do not know if Oregon Judicial Department is lobbying for a change to legislative change to ballot measure 110.
They often solicit opinions from subject matter experts, is why I asked.
And I'm on a committee that does provide input on new laws that are being drafted, but this was enacted by the people.
Sure.
Okay. That's what we live with, we enforce. It's create, what I bring it up for, and I want to give you perspective, is what my treatment court people are telling me is this is one of the reasons that the drugs are running rampant in your schools and in your community, is because they're receiving a piece of paper. Nobody's making a phone call. We know that because here we are. Of 2,000 citations that were issued, 91 made a phone call. So we know that's not happening. And most of the statistics that I shared with you for the FTA rate, so most of the citations are being issued, they don't show up in court, and that's how they're getting disposed of. A $45 fine's entered, or $100.
I did not know there was a E-level, that's new. That was educational to hear that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, David and then Dimar.
Yeah, thanks, Judge. That was a very informative presentation. Thank you for doing that. My quick question, you mentioned you're going to go to the other city councils mm-hmm. and the Sheriff's Department.
Yes.
Since this obviously is a countywide issue, and I understand mm-hmm. you come to the city council here in Newport first, but have you approached the Sheriff's Department even before you came here tonight, or are you waiting for the city of Newport to...
I was just trying to get on the agenda. You guys were the nicest that got me on the agenda first.
I guess
actually, trying to get on the Board of Commissioners first, and they wouldn't hear from me.
Okay, but I know that you can have direct... I mean, obviously, the Sheriff's Department is separate from the Board of Commissioners as far as those kind of conversations, but I'm just curious... Without disclosing anything confidential, whether that's actually been approached as well.
I've spoken to all the police chiefs. Okay, so Lincoln City, I spoke to Chief Malloy, I've spoken to Sheriff Landers. They are all ready to commit to a detective, and they want a detective committed to this. They understand the need for it. Their officers are very frustrated. They get community reports about drug abuse. They're responding to the overdose deaths. They want this.
Okay.
They don't have the resources to commit to it.
No, thanks.
Emar?
Well, Judge, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I worry about this a lot, you know, because I have grandchildren, and my granddaughter is now 14, and she's going to middle school, and we had the talk about drugs and you know, those little blue things. I said, if you ever see one, don't take it, you know, because it's fentanyl, it'll probably kill you. So I appreciate you coming and talking to us. There used to be an interagency drug team in Lincoln County.
There was.
Yep. That was disbanded, right?
It was.
How is this going to be different than that?
It's not.
Particularly the same?
It could look very much the same. I think it was a resource shift. I mean, I wasn't part of the decision-making that disbanded that, but I have a feeling it was resources got committed to different things, and then for whatever reason, it no longer exists.
Yeah, right.
So it would look very similar to that. What I'm hoping, as I said before, these things don't happen in silos, so they really, what I'm seeing is, and I review the search warrants for police departments, they need to communicate with each other because the dealers that are dealing in Toledo are the same ones dealing in Newport, okay? And there's not enough communication between the agencies.
Sounds to me like we need to get all the mayors of the different towns together and start talking about this, right?
I hope so. I'm hoping, again, what the result is a coordinated community response. And when I say community, I mean Lincoln County. Coordinated community response because it doesn't know geographical boundaries. And to have one law enforcement agency work in a silo isn't helpful. If Newport has a really good drug person, it's not going to help. You're not going to see real results.
One thing I know is that the drugs, today's drugs don't have economic boundaries or social boundaries either.
They don't. You can talk to the people sitting behind me. They will tell you they each have their story, and they're as varied as the people sitting there. It knows no boundaries.
And the effect of this drug team, I think I would support it if we started talking about it. But I think I'd be very interested in talking about that as a council, maybe to start. It's got to start somewhere, so maybe Newport can start the thing up again.
And we are going into our first budget meeting, and God willing, the budget will be out tomorrow or maybe Wednesday if we don't get everything put together. It's been a very busy period of time. But the question I have, there's a lot of frustration in the law enforcement community about the limitations of what can be done for violators of the various drug laws. What would the focus of this group actually be? Would it be looking at more the manufacturers and the dealer end of thing?
Yes.
And what's your advice on dealing with the individuals that are, you know, that don't have a criminal amount of drugs on them? Are you advising that they be issued tickets? That's been kind of the big law enforcement questions that been trying to deal with in this new framework of the decriminalization of you know, certain amounts of the drugs.
Sure. And what used to happen is it used to have, when you had a drug team, you'd have control buys where they would, they'd have informants that they would work with. Those types of things take relationships. They take time to develop. They get information from different sources about who's bringing in the fentanyl into the community. It has to be what I don't want to see, though, when you say go after dealers. It has to stay local, okay? We're not, I don't want all of the local resources I'm asking you to dedicate here to go off to, you know, we want the big dealer in Salem. I want the commitment to be of this team, whatever is envisioned here, to keep their focus local and to make sure that we are using, if we're dedicating these resources here, that they're in the schools. They're getting information locally here to address it. It's difficult now because a lot of the laws have changed as far as what would constitute a delivery. Before, it used to be if you had a substantial quantity of something, they could infer that you were not using it for personal use, you were delivering it. The law just changed. Now, just possession of that is an attempted delivery. It's not a delivery. So, I mean, it's the laws. The police are trying to keep up with that. Laws changed about when you can pull over and stop somebody and the scope of your stop. And I'm seeing officers who aren't trained in this. So one thing that would be really good, because a lot of cases, they get them, they bring them to me, and I have to suppress their evidence because it's not lawfully obtained. I would love to see a resource that is up on search and seizure. So when they do that investigation, they actually get legally admissible evidence that is subject to a prosecution. Well, when I say, what do I want? I want, I'm not advocating when people come into the criminal justice system, we need to send them all to prison. That's what I, when I talked about the specialty courts, I see that when they come into the criminal justice system, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to get them help, to motivate them to make those choices in recovery. That's what I see as our goal. The people that are sitting behind me tell me that they wouldn't be where they are if they hadn't been brought into the criminal justice system. It wasn't a decision they were going to make on their own, so to speak. That's how our roads intersected and where they are right now.
Would they be willing to share their story?
Sorry?
Would any of them be willing to share their story?
How are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
All right.
Please speak into the microphone.
Which one?
No, that one right there.
Hi. So my name is Anthony. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and I've been in prison multiple times. First one was about 5 years for illegal sale of marijuana to a minor 1,000 feet near a school. Then I did back-to-back prison sets, literally 2018 to about 2020 or 2017, maybe to 2019 for back-to-back UUMVs. But my drug use started when I was 8 or 9 years old. My first initial juvenile sentence was for attempted robbery, I had a pistol with me. It just on and on. I've been committing my life to crime over the years. Going to prison was nothing to me. It wasn't scary. It was a learning process. It's where I learned pretty much anything that would make me money to go ahead and fuel my addiction. My criminality came first before my addiction came. But I was always addicted to drugs regardless of it. Fentanyl is something rarely new. You see it now, and they started putting in methamphetamines. That's what my drug of choice at the end of the day was. So now that I'm in this position where I was looking at a lengthy prison sentence, I was like, if Bockhart or if Benjamin wanted to go ahead and give me my full sentence, it was 119 months for a felon possession of a firearm, 2 stolen cars, and I had some drugs and illegal elude. It was, a felony elude. And I was told I was too high a risk. I was told that I was not going to be able to make it because I was too high of a risk and there was somebody that was not going to be able to be in that court system. Benjamin went to bat for me, and I actually got put out on ankle monitor because I was high risk. So I enrolled myself in an outpatient program at Phoenix ahead of time to show and prove to Hope Court that that's something I really wanted to do and I was passionate behind it. Since then, I'm pretty much went from pretrial, got my own place. I haven't missed a week because each week is what counts. So I haven't really missed any weeks. I'm fully engaged in my outpatient every UA I've made. I have a job. I work down at the docks, which I had prior to getting Hope Court, so I made that work on top of that. Can't get my license back till October, but that's my next goal to set. I think I've spoken twice at an overdose awareness at the actual courthouse, on top of had a reporter come to Phoenix Wellness and do a kind of a background and how is the reward system for your inpatient, outpatient program, how do they reward you on top of the ballot that we're talking about right now. I have a his and her, I have a, you know, a his and hers, a in and out, pros and cons about the whole ballot 110, but that's something that I'm not really going to speak around. But my background looks to like, it doesn't work. For me, ballot 10 would have never worked because I would have ran. You know, if you gave me that chance, you gave me a ticket, I'm gone. There were no consequence. I'm used to going to prison. That's my consequences. If I do the crime, you do the time. For someone like me, now it's a different story. For someone for you who's younger, you give them a ticket now, there is no consequence. They're going to keep doing it at the end of the day, you know. So it's something that we do for our kids. I have six kids, okay? My oldest is 18-year-old, smokes marijuana, and I don't like it. But I have these talk. I have to be honest with my kids. My little girls, my little boys, I have to be honest. Because if you don't speak about it now, you're never going to know. Because this is something that they're going to hide from you. The text messages are different. We don't, you know, some of your text messages from your kids, you're like, what do you say? What does this mean? You don't know. I'm being honest. You don't know. So it's like you have to decipher something, which is like you think is plain English, but it's not. So you have to be more diligent in our, even our parenting nowadays. Because if you're not, then you're gonna end up being one of the ones who come home and, you know, sorry to say, but your kid might be purple and blue and be no pulse and something that we have to really watch for. But it hurts to know that, but we do have to be more aware of it. That's all I got to say.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Thank you. You guys have a good day.
Thank you very much. I know that years ago I talked to people.
Somebody else wants to share.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Jesse Ramsey is with the Siletz tribe, and he has a powerful story to share.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jesse Ramsey. I am the transitional living coordinator for the Siletz tribe. I grew up in Siletz my whole life. Drugs was a big part of my life growing up. And I do remember back whenever I was young, everyone was scared of the Lent team. It was the interagency narcotics team, you know, and I know that kind of deterred a lot of people from doing the stuff they were doing because they knew that there was a set of people out there that were just looking for the drug dealers and stuff. And it was a pretty big deterrent. But as I got a little bit older, I started going to jail and I didn't like it. And I got, kind of got used to it. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't scary. It wasn't nothing. So then I, you know, started going more and more. And then I got into drug court. They let me into drug court. I got in there and started doing good. Went to my first couple court appointments. And, you know, I was so used to going into court, seeing the judge, and it was always a really negative experience. They had nothing but bad stuff to say about me because I was doing nothing but bad things. And then when I got in there and they were, praising me for doing the right thing and stuff, it made it a positive experience. And it made me realize they were there to support me, not to punish me. And it changed my life. You know, I went from living in the transitional living center in Siletz to now I'm the coordinator. And, this whole epidemic thing is super scary. I got a 19-year-old and a 15-year-old daughter. And, you know, I know that there's, you know, historically people talk to their kids, don't use drugs. And now I'm at a point to where it's like, am I going to tell my kids not to do drugs or to make sure they're safe when they do drugs? Because it's scary, you know? Like, I went from using pills to using meth to using heroin because I didn't want to be sober, and it was easier to get. And now the sad thing is the easiest thing to get is fentanyl, and fentanyl kills people all the time. I used drugs in this community for 10 years, and out of those 10 years, I knew one person that personally that died from it, and it was really traumatic. Within the last year, I know 10 people that have overdosed, you know, people that have been clean, had a relapse and died, people I was really close to. And it affects everybody. And it's so scary. I got kids in school and I got, all these people in our community, and it's, you know, every time I hear a siren or something, I think, man, is that the next person that's, you know, passed away because of this fentanyl? I just think it would be so much better if we had somebody, because I know there's been people that have been in drug court. Whenever I got into drug court, it was my assumption, okay, so I'm in drug court, I'm committed to staying clean, and if I mess up, I'm going to go to jail, and I'm going to sit in jail until I get a treatment bed. And if it wasn't for going to jail the first time and getting, it wasn't about being scared, it was about going in there, getting a clear head, realizing what was important in my life to get me to make the changes that I needed to make. And now it's like I know of people that are in drug court, they don't do what they're going to do, they're supposed to do, and they get picked up by a cop. The cop calls the jail, they say, no, we're not going to take them. Then they call their PO, and the PO says, yeah, I want them held. They call the jail back and they say, well, we told you, we're not going to take them. So, you know, it's just, it's really frustrating whenever, you know, there's certain people that just need to get a little bit of, you know, clarity in their head. And, you know, it's good people that I've known my whole life before their drug addiction, and seeing them turned away and not get the chances that I got, it's pretty hard to deal with. And, you know, knowing that it's such a high risk that somebody, if they continue to use, that the chances of them losing their life are pretty big. Especially people that are, you get people that get into recovery, and then there's a lot of guilt and shame whenever if you relapse on drugs, there's a lot of guilt and shame associated with that. So the natural thing to do is, I'm going to hide this from people, and I'm going to use alone. Well, if you use fentanyl alone, the chances are, you know, you don't have no one to administer Narcan to you, so you're going to end up dead. And it's really, really scary because there's a lot of people that I care about and love in this community that still use drugs. And if there's no consequences to their action, they're going to continue to use until something really bad happens.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing it.
So I know it's a big ask. I know resources are scarce. But I can guarantee you, if you commit to these resources to fund this position, it will literally save lives. I don't say that lightly. And when I look at these people and I think that one of them couldn't be here, it's worth it. You see the things that they're doing, the people they are, they will give back tenfold to your community. And they're here to support other people. So again, I ask for a commitment. I'm going around to the other, I'm talking to the Board of Commissioners on Wednesday. I have Toledo and Lincoln City next week. And all I'm asking for is a commitment. I'm happy to come back. I'm asking each agency to dedicate a detective and to reinstate an interagency, a community, I don't care what you call it, dedicated toward drug enforcement.
How many detectives are you actually talking about?
I want one dedicated detective from each agency.
Just one dedicated for the whole county?
Not for the whole, from each agency. So I want one
each agency.
I want each agency to create a detective position dedicated to this interagency team. I think it's the only way it's going to work.
You're going to go all the different cities?
I sure am.
In the county?
In the county,
yep.
I remember, Cynthia.
Yeah, I have a question about the previous interagency drug enforcement that was headed by Rob Bovet, I think. Was that right?
He was in county council.
He was in, okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
How was that formed, and how could we do that again? And should we? Is that?
Who heads it? Okay, mm-hmm. Who coordinates
how would it,
it
be formed again? Because you said it was disbanded.
I think it is simply a matter of dedicating, having those detectives that are dedicated, who runs it, yet there's not like an independent fund that is going to run it. They will meet regularly. They will share resources. They will coordinate resources amongst the agencies. But as far as what it is going to look like and who's going to run it, like I said, I'm going to talk to the Board of Commissioners. It made sense. I think at that time, Mr. Bovet was took part of the lead on it. But he would, at that time, it was methamphetamine labs, okay, that were sort of running. Yeah. That was the big topic of the day. This is 10 times worse than methamphetamine. I lived through that. I was a prosecutor during that, okay? People didn't die in methamphetamine labs, not in Lincoln County. I don't think there was a single death that you could attribute to a meth lab in Lincoln County. You have 10 people that died of an overdose. there's more, and there's more coming. Okay, fentanyl is a greater threat than methamphetamine labs ever were.
Well, thanks so much, Judge, for coming. And process-wise, our next budget meeting is April 26th.
Yep, right? First one.
Budget officer over there?
That is correct.
Okay.
And how would that go about as far as, would Chief Malloy have to put together the figures and present that to you?
I think it'd be good to have this presentation at the budget committee, actually.
We won't have time for this presentation at the budget committee unless you want to stay until like 11 o'clock at night. But I think the way our budget process works is if one of the council members asks to consider making a change to the budget or, you know, to specifically say this, then at the following meeting, which is about 3 weeks later on a Tuesday, that's when we would actually discuss the merits of a potential change in the budget. And so it'd be, if that's on the agenda, we certainly can let you know, and that would be the appropriate time, because that's more narrowed down to those issues that are where there's an exception to the budget that's been requested.
Okay. All right. And I'll keep an eye out for that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, I remember back in the day when the district attorney got a new intern from college.
Yeah.
Am I dating myself?
Yeah.
One of the things that I'd like to say is when I used to work for the police department, I was a detective sergeant, and part of my job was to supervise Newport's detective in the drug team. And I would go over every week for the drug team meetings and so forth. And what amazed me was the inner, I can't even think of the word.
Cooperation?
It's not just here. The people here get it from the valley. The people from the valley, it comes up I-5 or up 101. And then when the drugs come here, it's distributed. There's multiple distribution points in our county. And it's tracking all that was very difficult back in the day. Fortunately, we have better computers now, so I think it would be better. One of the problems that when we had the drug team, it started to be a budget problem. One city would bag out, the other one would bag out, and then before you know it, there was no team anymore. And we went through our budget committee that 1 year, and I tried to keep the detective position, and I invited District Attorney Beauvais and Sheriff Dotson to come and give a presentation to the budget committee. And unfortunately, it lost. And David can attest to this. I was the only one to vote for the drug team to keep it going, at least from our department's aspect.
I was a council member at the time, not city attorney, though.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it failed. But I think, you know, we still have budget problems today. There's nothing different. But I think you will definitely have a positive vote for me.
Thank you very much. And then, like I said, I'm happy to return and provide whatever support and answer any questions that you have. I understand it's a big ask.
Right.
Thank you.
My concern is just about capacity within our current police department and being down officers and just how we are spread thin. Mm-hmm. So that's my concern is if we move someone over, we still have like an 18-month period till they're like fully on the new folks are fully on the road and hiring's a factor. And so that's my concern is just how will we be able to like fill our ranks? That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, because we just on that particular point, one of the real challenges we have is filling vacancies that are already budgeted. So that's something that we'll talk about internally to kind of provide a response back to the council on.
And I talked to Chief Malloy. He spoke about those issues before I made my presentation. And I think I can speak on his behalf and say that he's fully supportive of this. So we talked about those challenges. They are real. And I understand that.
Thank you very much for your time tonight. We appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
And with that, we're going to take a 10-minute break.
The next 10-minute break. Right there.